The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
Welcome to Hard Currency, the Financial Times podcast on the $5 trillion foreign exchange market. I'm Roger Blitz, and this week has seen a bit of a dollar fight back thanks to a hawkish stance from the Federal Reserve. So with the Fed gearing up for possibly 4 rate hikes this year, have investors been too quick to write off the dollar? Or are we simply going through a small blip in what is emerging as a new dollar bear market? And as Theresa May gathers her cabinet colleagues to thrash out once and for all a UK government position on Brexit, how should investors position themselves on the pound over the next few weeks? Well, with me to look at the dollar story this year and sterling is Bilal Hafiz, Forex strategist at Nomura. Bilal, I've read a piece this week coming up with 17 reasons why people think the dollar has been weak. Do we care still about what is the specific reason for dollar weakness?
I think that there are many, many reasons to be bearish on the dollar. And to some extent, you're right in saying that if there are so many factors, why focus on one particular factor? But I would say that the nuance is important, especially to try to understand the shorter term dynamics in the dollar and also which currencies the dollar will weaken the most against. But I would agree that there's kind of a whole range of factors that will drive the dollar lower.
Well, I wouldn't want to let you pass without giving us your own reasons. Sure. why you think. What's
number
one
for you?
Yeah, I
mean, for me, there's the main medium-term factor is the fact that the US current account deficit and the fiscal deficit is all deteriorating. So that's kind of an overarching sort of factor. And also the other one I would say in terms of interest rates, which has been a big focus of markets in terms of the breakdown between this move in US interest rates higher and dollar lower, is that the dollar had already appreciated significantly when the Fed started to taper at the early stages of its tightening phase. And now the market is to some extent sort of shrugging off further Fed hikes, and instead focusing very much on what the ECB will do, what the Bank of England will do. And that's another factor.
We had these Fed minutes this week, which were pretty hawkish. Some people said, well, we didn't learn anything new. We never do learn anything new from Fed minutes. We just follow the tone. The dollar has done pretty well this week in anticipation of those Fed minutes. But actually now we're seeing once again an equities rally. The dollar is again falling. It feels like the market is saying, yeah, OK, we know what the Fed's going to do.
Yeah, and I'd agree. You know, I think whether the Fed does 3 hikes this year or 4 hikes or 2 or 3 next year, it's not really such a big deal. It's interesting, recently the main periods of dollar strength has really come when stocks have weakened. It's been in a negative environment, risk aversion. And so when stocks have been weak, the dollar has been stronger. So we haven't really seen a period where markets are doing well, stock markets are doing well, and the dollar's appreciating. And that's quite telling for me in terms of where the overall forces are on the dollar.
I mean, if investors are underweight anywhere, it's in things like European equities. And people say to me, well, actually, if you're looking for a reason for the dollar weakness, this is the direction first that the market is going to go. It's going to be piling into European equities where they're underweight, and that is going to be a cause of dollar weakness. Because after all, you look at US equities and they're pretty toppy, they're pretty expensive, as you know, the cycle's is a lot more mature. Do you buy that?
No, I'd agree. And to some extent, last year we saw that trend start to unfold where there was large purchases of European equities by foreigners. And I would say in general, Asian investors, whether it's the official sector or the private sector, European investors, everyone's already quite overweight US assets cumulatively over the last 10, 15 years. And so if there is some reorientation, it has to be away from the US towards other markets.
Yeah. And in the search for other markets, let's look at the foreign exchange market. If you are convinced on the dollar weak story, where do you strengthen? Where on the other side do you go? The euro seemed to be the favoured one at the start of this year, and obviously for a lot of last year, but there's a lot of momentum behind the yen at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now we're seeing more sort of broad-based dollar weakness. Mm-hmm. And
so it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter to some extent. The main uncertainty we have, at least in the next month or so, is the overall risk environment. You know, are stocks going to remain weak? Or are stocks going to start to rally once again? Now, if they stay on the weakish side, like we've seen this week, then that really puts much more weight on the yen side. And so our bias at this stage is really just to not try to be too clever and just say sell the dollar against both the euro and the yen. If I had to force to pick one, in the short term, I'd pick the yen because I think we're in this unstable risk environment. But on a one-year horizon, I think either one of them will do very well.
So that leads on to my next question, which is that one of the commentators of my piece about the 17 reasons for the fall will say, can you come up with 17 reasons why it might rise? And I suppose there you have it, that the market uncertainty causing equity weakness, is that number one reason?
Yeah, I would say that's probably the most obvious factor right now. If we have this pronounced period of risk aversion, and so suddenly the dollar has to would strengthen that environment. Yeah. Aside from that, in a more positive environment, and something that is a possibility would be if this global synchronized recovery that we've had over the past few years stops, and instead the US just takes off.
Yes,
because of fiscal stimulus and animal spirits or whatever you want to call it. Meanwhile, Europe, China all start to sort of head down growth-wise, and we don't really see any sort of improving growth momentum. We see weaker inflation in those regions, and the US just takes off and decouples from
all
them.
All of which just doesn't look very likely.
Yeah,
at
I
the
think
moment.
That's, that is unlikely. I think if the US does well, it will pull the rest up anyway. And also, I would argue that Europe is really much more earlier in its recovery than the US is. I mean, the US is much more mature in its recovery cycle. The unemployment's already at the lows, whereas Europe isn't quite there yet.
Bilal, are you a betting man? Would you prefer to put some money on whether we are actually now in a dollar bear market, which actually, if we are, it started effectively, you know, this time last year.
Yeah, I think absolutely we are. You know, and we a year ago we actually, I mean, not to be too boastful, we actually said we are at the beginning of a multi-year downtrend in the dollar.
And send me that note.
I'll send you that note. Yeah, yeah. It's like the weak dollar revolution will be tweeted. Okay. We wrote in the first week of January last year. And I think, you know, these trends are very powerful. They're strong. They tend to last 5, 6, 7 years, and we're at the early stages of that.
Okay. And in which case, how long is it going to last? I mean, on average, they last what, about 8
or
9 years?
On average, they last, well, the literal sort of average is 7 years,
right?
So the biblical 7 years. Obviously, it can be 5 years or 9 years and so on, but it tends to last quite long. Usually, the first year or two, you tend to see a very strong dollar downtrend.
Right.
So it just moves down in almost a straight line. Thereafter, year three, year four, you see more corrections. So it gets much choppier, but the trend is still down.
That is taking an average since Bretton Woods, since 71.
Yeah.
So things have changed a bit recently. I mean, obviously, we're moving from a kind of a easy money period to monetary tightening. I mean, that might influence, I suppose, the length, or the, we might be seeing shorter periods of
dollar. I mean, exactly. You know, things could change in that respect. But I think the underlying fundamentals, what triggers those reversals, remain in place, like current account dynamics, valuations, trade policy shifts, and then relative business cycle dynamics.
And political risk as well, which is was a big feature last year. Are we seeing it again this year? I mean, we're about to talk about Brexit, but I mean, South Africa, for example, and Zuma disappearing. The US, I suppose, remains a political risk environment.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the political risk side, I think we've had a number of years now where it's been the developed world where you had the main political risk up until the French elections last year. I think now it's all about EM political risk. I think that's where the more pronounced risk is. Now, South Africa, that's the first political event of this year for EM.
Yeah.
And it's been favorable to South Africa with Zuma's exit and Ramaphosa's entry. And I think that's likely to be quite positive for the country. But then we have Mexico, we have Brazil coming up this year. And then we have India next year. And already people are talking about the rise of populism in India. So suddenly it shifted to EM. On the DM side, it's been interesting. Markets have kind of shrugged off Italian risk. They've shrugged off what's going on in Germany.
Yep.
The market doesn't seem to be too
not
concerned.
Shrugging off Brexit quite.
They're
yet.
Not. No. And I think the Brexit thing is just the ongoing drama that we're seeing. I mean, I would say on the positive side, the Europeans do appear in some quarters to have softened their stance a bit. you know, by the EU Parliament talking about Articles of Association, you know, similar like a Ukraine-style agreement where you could have special rules for financial services. So there is some moderation there. And also, there are some commentary from Europe which is saying that the UK may be allowed to negotiate free trade arrangements with other countries during transition.
It's all very positive, Bilal. I mean, most investors I speak to are erring very much on the side of negativity, not even caution. I mean, they assume the worst.
Yeah, no, the reason I mentioned these...
to assume the worst.
Yeah, no, the reason I mentioned these positive factors are that, you know, we can easily just paint a very negative apocalyptic sort of view for the UK. And it is true that, you know, in essence, the Conservative Party doesn't have a united front on this. At any point, there could be a potential civil war of some kind, a leadership election, which could undermine the whole project. Time will tell whether that will emerge or not. So, you know.
Particular feels like a point of no return. I know we've said this many times before, but it does feel like businesses, investment decisions really are right up to the edge. I mean, the FT had this story about Unilever thinking about relocating its headquarters out of London. I mean, it does feel like business needs decisions now. In other words, it feels particularly binary for Sterling.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. And I think part of that is we're coming closer to the deadline. It's less than a year now, I guess, almost away. So we need some clarity on that front. But you could see a scenario where we could end up in a transition arrangement that lasts 2-3 years. And suddenly that...
Or indefinitely.
It depends what the Brexiteers say about that. And also you have to sort of recognise that the public polling suggests that more people now are kind of anti-Brexit as well. So MPs have to kind of recognise that sort of dynamic as well. Yeah. So on the Brexit side, what we've seen since Brexit is that Brexit occasionally does, appear to be a negative factor for the pound, but the pound doesn't collapse as much as you think it would. So I'd be cautious in being too bearish on the pound on the Brexit factor by itself.
Good. Caution on Brexit. Bilal Hafiz of Nomura, thank you very much indeed. Join us again next week for Hard Currency, when we will be examining the first major utterings of the new Fed chair, Jerome Powell, and what they tell us about the future path of the Federal Reserve. Until then, it's goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.